Hi, I'm Carmen LaBerge. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Hey, friends, welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. Welcome, welcome, welcome. I don't know if you heard the SRN news there at the top of the hour. I hope you did. We could actually just spend our entire hour roaming around in the five or six headlines that were just shared there in the breaking news of this part of the day. So this is supposed to be, you know, summer, right? We're supposed to be, whew, taking a deep breath, kind of just enjoying ourselves, sitting on the beach, reading books. Instead, man, the pace of decisions coming out of the U.S. Supreme Court, conversations about pardon and self-pardon, debates globally about circumcision. Did you think we would be talking about the legality or illegality or the banning of circumcision in 2018? Like, right, these are actually all religious liberty conversations. How about a travel ban? If you happen to be an employee of the state of California, you cannot, in the course of your work anyway, travel to 9 states in the United States of America. Okay, so we are having religious liberty conversations here on Connecting Faith in order that you can actually intelligently reconnect the news of the everyday to the eternal. We want you to be able to have the conversations that are going on in the culture and to have those conversations not only from an expressly Christian worldview, but where you're prepared to bring the mind of Christ to bear on literally the headline news of the day. So I can't deal with all 5 of these headlines right now, but we will seek to do so substantively over the coming days. Let me just say this to Christians. The whole concept of a self-pardon sort of runs contrary to the idea that we need a Savior and that the pardon that God offers us in Jesus Christ is something that we recognize our sin, we repent of our sin, we turn to Him for a pardon that only He can offer. So in the pardon conversation, that might be one perspective that you could bring to bear, the whole concept of self-righteousness, which is the idea behind the notion of a self-pardon, is not something that you and I as Christians would certainly ever appeal to. Today's two decisions that have been announced by the U.S. Supreme Court are incredibly important. Today we will deal with the Masterpiece Cake Shop case ruling, and tomorrow we will deal with the ruling related to abortion. So let me just bring you up to speed on what has happened in relationship to the U.S. Supreme Court 7-2 ruling in favor of the Masterpiece Cake Shop case. So this is an absolute affirmation of religious liberty. It's an affirmation of the freedom of conscience that we enjoy here in the United States of America. As with every case, the particular facts of this case related to a guy named Jack Phillips, who lives in Colorado and is a baker, the facts of this case are specific to the case. But as you and I both know, all rulings of the Supreme Court have an application that extends far beyond the particular case involved. And so while this is not the Supreme Court saying to anyone, you can have a business that discriminates against people in the United States. That's not what Jack Phillips was ever seeking to do. It's not what he did. And it's not what the Supreme Court says that we may do. This is actually a conversation about whether or not the state, in this case, the state of Colorado, can force a person into an expression of speech, in this case, the baking of a unique cake that's in violation of their sincerely held religious beliefs. In this case, the sincerely held religious beliefs of Jack Phillips that marriage is by God's design between a man and a woman, and therefore he could not, in good conscience, bake a unique cake that would be celebrating the specific event, the solemnization of a same-sex marriage. So that's what's going on here. Now, you are going to see this case characterized in the news. You're going to see reactions to it characterized as discriminatory. You're going to see this characterized as, you know, the validation of hate. You're going to see all kinds of characterization today in the media. You are going to see on social media people losing their minds over this ruling by the Supreme Court. So I want you and I to both take a deep breath, be sure we understand what this case is about, be sure we understand what it means, and let us be very sure to understand what it does not mean. So let's be very clear that what the U.S. Supreme Court has affirmed is that both LGBTQ people and religious creative entrepreneurs are both due protection under the law of the land. So it was in June of last year that the U.S. Supreme Court actually agreed to consider this masterpiece cake shop case. And it's in this case that the Colorado Civil Rights Commission ordered a baker named Jack Phillips to create a custom wedding cake in celebration of a wedding that was contrary to his religious beliefs. And the state cannot actually force us, this is what the Supreme Court ruled, the state cannot force or compel a person in the United States to do something that's contrary to their religious beliefs. So today's decision affirms the right of every American to believe, speak, and live out their faith without government compulsion, without the government telling you you have to do something that runs contrary to what you believe. So the Supreme Court actually created the need for today's ruling by its own decision in 2015. In what we all know as the Obergefell case. So it was the Obergefell decision in which the justices of the United States Supreme Court created the quote-unquote right of marriage for same-sex people. It was in that act that they actually pitted the freedom of sexual expression against the constitutionally guaranteed right of religious freedom. And so that ruling, the Obergefell decision, set the stage for this masterpiece cake shop case, upon which the justices have now issued a historic 7-2 ruling in favor of religious freedom, religious liberty, religious conscience. So the cries of discrimination can already be heard, but this 7-2 decision is not close, nor is it narrow. You're going to see the word narrow in lots of headlines related to this. It's not that the decision was narrow. 7-2 is not a narrow decision, but that the ruling is narrow, which means to say that there are wider issues that the Supreme Court had the opportunity to rule on, and they did not. They ruled on a very narrow part of this conversation. It's notable that only Justices Ginsburg and Sotomayor dissented from the majority opinion. The majority opinion was written by Justice Kennedy. Justices Gorsuch, Kagan, and Thomas each also wrote concurring opinions. And each one of those concurring opinions have other justices joining them. And so these are actually worthy conversations to have. These are worthy opinions to read in order that you and I can be well informed about not only what our Supreme Court is doing, but what the law of the land is here in these United States. Now, I don't want you to be fooled as you read the coverage, nor the social media reactions to this particular story. The Supreme Court has not issued a license to discriminate, nor are Christian proprietors now free to hang, you know, no gays allowed signs in their shop windows. Just as Jack Phillips never refused to serve a gay couple at the Masterpiece Cake Shop, no American business owner is free to refuse service nor to sell items that are on the shelves to gay people. Like, you can't do that, nor should you want to. Everything that is on display for sale is for sale to everyone. What Jack Phillips cannot be compelled to do, the Supreme Court ruled, is be forced to perform an artistic or creative act, in his case, baking a unique cake, in support of a specific event, in this case, a gay wedding, which runs contrary to his religious beliefs. So it's not the people, but the message that the Supreme Court ruled Jack Phillips was free to refuse. Does that make sense? Okay, this is actually not a refusal of the people. It's a refusal of the act of using his creative expression to do something that would be against his religiously bound conscience. Now, I think it's important to understand not only what the Masterpiece Cake Shop ruling means, but what it does not mean. Let me be quick to say, I don't think it means that Jack Phillips is now going to be free, unhindered, and unharassed in his baking of cakes in Colorado. I think that the die against him has been cast. I don't think that this is a guy who's going to be able to joyfully return to the cake business anytime soon. I think we are going to see the continual harassment of this man in the culture, because let's just admit that the U.S. Supreme Court and the court of public opinion do not operate by the same rules, nor do they operate by the same sense of justice. So those who see Jack Phillips' faith as bigoted and his business practices as discriminatory, they are not likely to have their hearts nor their minds changed by the Supreme Court ruling. So the minds of those who see people of convictional faith as inherently hateful are not likely to be changed by this Supreme Court ruling. However, it does raise a lot of questions for a lot of Christian business proprietors in a lot of states across the country. There are actually 21 states across the country who have these, who have similar, what we would call public accommodation laws that use words like gender identity and sexual orientation in terms of protected status. And so these are conversations we're going to continue to have. There's actually already another similar case like this one growing out of California. And so I expect that the larger issues upon which the Supreme Court did not rule in the Masterpiece Cake Shop case will yet be before us as a culture. All right, friends, I got to take a quick break. When I come back, joining me will be Carl Medeiros. The question before us is, you know, how long does it take to change a life? Well, how long does it take to change the conversation? How long does it take for you to represent Jesus and the kingdom of heaven in the conversations of the day? Carl's answer, 42 seconds. We're going to tell you all about that when we come back. I'm Carmen LaBerge. You're listening to Connecting Faith. We got to take a quick break, and then I'll be back with Carl Medeiros. Hey, friends, you are listening to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. I am joined by Carl Medeiros. He's an international expert in Arab-American and Muslim-Christian relations, promoting peacemaking, cultural, political, and religious dialogue for reconciliation. Carl is the author of Speaking of Jesus, The Art of Non-Evangelism, and Muslims, Christians, and Jesus, Gaining Understanding and Building Relationships. He's also the author of Tea with Hezbollah, Sitting at the Enemy's Table. He and his wife have three children, and they split their time between Dubai and Colorado, which we will get to in a minute. But Carl Medeiros, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thanks, Carmen. Great to be here with you.
All right. Well, it's great to have you. So we talk a lot here on this show about conversation. You have written several books on the topic of conversation. This particular book is 42 Seconds. And in it, you unpack and describe Jesus's model for everyday interactions. So as we're trying to get God back into every conversation, what can we do in 42 seconds?
Yeah, actually can do a lot. It's interesting that, you know, sociologists say that the average conversation length of an American is under a minute. So, you know, think of going to Starbucks. You walk up, you say hi, she says hi. What can I get you, sir? You say, I'll have a grande double pump hazelnut latte. And she says, that's it. Anything else? You say, no, have a nice day, you too. I mean, so that's not a very effective or powerful conversation, but it's a conversation. It lasted about 25 seconds, and we have those all the time, and so did Jesus. He had short conversations all the time, so how can we be better at that?
All right, so in 42 seconds, what do you sort of reveal about Jesus's model for interacting with people, even in those brief encounters?
Well, yeah, and just so you know, I mean, the 42 seconds thing came from me having an idea about 4 years ago, you know, to time the conversations of Jesus. So not his teachings, not the Sermon on the Mount, which that takes about 22, 23 minutes to read, but like just his conversation with Nicodemus or the woman at the well or with his disciples. And, you know, if you think that those were his full actual conversations, we don't know. There might have been more, but that's what we have recorded of his conversations. The average length of his were 42 seconds. So look at what Jesus did. I mean, look at the conversation with Nicodemus. Less than a minute long, that's a pretty powerful conversation that we keep talking about until now. Or the woman at the well in John chapter 4. Powerful conversations that are very short, and he had a way to ask questions, to not answer questions, to tease, to nuance. He was actually very, very clever. I mean, he is Jesus after all. But, I mean, I think we forget how clever he is, and he was when he was on Earth, in his conversational style.
So, you know, I think we imagine when we enter into conversations with people, particularly people who we suspect do not share our beliefs, I think that we imagine that we're going to have like a propositional apologetics debate format ready. Like, yeah. You know, I'm going to have to have a lot of memorized material. I'm going to need to be able to talk about, you know, what's your worldview. I'm going to need to be able to have a ready defense for everything that they bring up. And you're basically helping us recognize it's just not that complicated.
It's really not. I think it's unfortunate that we've grown up in a very Western apologetic model, taught to us by some very bright people, by the way, including, you know, C.S. Lewis. I mean, Mere Christianity, I think I almost have that book memorized. I love it. Or, you know, Josh McDowell, brilliant minds like this, Lee Strobel, you know, people who are amazing. Well, first of all, I have to remind myself, I'm not C.S. Lewis. I'm not that smart. I'm not Josh McDowell. I'm not Lee Strobel. I'm not Ravi Zacharias. So that's the first thing. We're probably mostly not that smart, if we're really honest. And then secondly, I hate to say this because it sounds judgmental about those guys, and actually they're all those names I just named are all heroes of mine, and I know all of them except C.S. Lewis personally. Jesus didn't do that. Actually, that was more of a Pauline model, which is great. Paul obviously is awesome, but he's not God. Jesus is. And so Jesus's model was to ask another question. He almost never gave an answer. Somebody asked him a question. He'd either ask a question back, or he'd answer a question that they didn't ask, or he would tell them a random story that doesn't make any sense, which we call parables. You know, and so he was actually really interesting in how he didn't answer people. And I think we have to be better at being cleverly, wisely nuanced, led by the Holy Spirit, not just to be obnoxious, where we just say, you know, well, let me ask you a question. You know, we don't want to be rude, but just be really thoughtful about how we don't answer questions the way Jesus didn't answer questions, and we forget about that. And there's very little teaching in the body of Christ about that.
I love that. So you've spent a lot of years living in the Middle East, and you split your time here in the United States. So I'm wondering if there are like genuine differences in conversation styles between those two cultures, and something we might learn from a Middle Eastern model.
Yeah, that's a great question. That's a really good question. Yes, there is, and I think a lot of this idea, or really my discovery that Jesus, you know, didn't answer questions, which, you know, any of us could discover if we thought about it. We just read the text, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. You'll notice that he literally doesn't answer questions. But I think I realized that living in Beirut, Lebanon for 12 years and working around the Arab world, and an Eastern way of thinking and an Eastern model of conversation is much more open-ended. They actually don't necessarily expect to answer. They're happy to answer a question with a story. They're happy to not answer a question at all. They're happy to answer something that you didn't even talk about. They're happy to go off on rabbit trails and bunny trails and down roads that you didn't know even existed in conversation. So it makes a Westerner, like it did me for many years, quite frustrated because I think when we read the Gospels, I think to me is why we're more attracted to Paul in our conversation styles and our apologetic, our witnessing, evangelistic styles, is because Paul kind of spoke to our predecessors, the Greeks, who is kind of, you know, they're kind of the fathers, our forefathers of Western logic. So Paul makes sense to us. Actually, Romans makes a lot more sense to us than Mark does. Mark, Matthew, Luke, you know, where Jesus talks.
Or John, right? Because he's like, you know, or John, right? Because there's like sometimes you're like, dude, what is he talking about?
Totally. Exactly. Yeah. And we don't understand it. And it's hard to understand Jesus as a Westerner. It's hard to understand Jesus, by the way, as an Easterner. I think he's a little bit confusing, and we don't like to be confused. So then we drift towards Paul or Peter, which obviously is fair enough. But Jesus is our model. So let's kind of get back to his conversation style and see what he has to offer. And I think it's a lot.
Okay, well, I know there's people listening who are thinking to themselves, well, I want that book. I want help with that. All right, so we've got a few copies to give away today to listeners. So if you would like a copy of Carl Medeiros' newest book, which is 42 Seconds, I invite you to either call us here on the studio line, 877-93-FAITH, 877-93-FAITH, and Rachel will be happy to take down your information. Or you can email me at carmen@myfaithradio.com. That's carmen@myfaithradio.com. So again, my conversation partner today is Carl Medaris. And the book that we're talking about is 42 Seconds. But we're really also just talking more broadly about sort of the art of conversation. I'm wondering, Carl, when you think of a good conversationalist, what kind of person comes to mind?
Somebody who doesn't approach the conversation already decided what he's going to say. Mm. So, you know, so we do the general niceties kind of all the same. How you doing? I'm fine. How are you? Fine. But then if it gets into real, like, conversation, maybe about politics or theology or about baking cakes, just had to throw that back in there. When I was listening to the just before I came on, you were talking about that. So I'm thinking, wow, my guess is most of us would enter a conversation like that with our minds already made up. Mm-hmm. And if you think about others that do that to us, have you ever noticed the person, when you're talking to them, they're kind of opening their mouth and they're leaning forward and they just can't wait to say something? I mean, that's so annoying. I mean, not that I ever do that, of course, but, you know, so we do that. We tend to do that with each other where we're so excited to tell our story that's better than your story or to make our point that's clearly better than your point. And most of us enter conversations, especially about weighty topics like, I mean, even sports. Or, I mean, if you try to convince me that Denver Broncos aren't the best football team, I live in Denver. That's not going to work. You're not going to convince me of that, even though the facts these days are against me. It doesn't matter.
Even though, you know, many of our listeners are in Wisconsin and in Minnesota.
Oh.
So they are going to be very, very quick. They're yelling at their radios right now. Yelling. They're yelling at their radios. I'm just telling you.
See, they probably like the Minnesota Vikings. I mean, that's the funniest. Like, why would they like – see, even that, you can't convince somebody of something. I mean, let alone politics. I mean, you've never gone to a Democrat before and said, hey, you dummy, you should be a Republican. And then the Democrat goes, wow, that's a great point. I think I'll switch tonight. I mean, that never happens. And so why do we treat conversations as if with a few words, like little barbs or little word bombs, we're going to change somebody's point of view? We need to be asking questions. I don't like the word open-minded, because that makes you sound wishy-washy and like you don't know what you believe. So I know what I believe about most things, including football and politics and theology and whatever. But I really want to know, I honestly want to know what you believe, period. And so I keep asking questions until I can figure out. Atheists are the best. I always want to know, I always ask atheists, when did you have a faith conversion to atheism? I'm so impressed with your faith that you believe there's no God. I love that. I love people of faith. Tell me about your conversion.
Mm-hmm.
So one is that confuses them because they never had anybody say that to them before. And two, it's honest. I actually want to know their story. And usually they have a story about a mean Christian probably, or they have some story that made them believe there's no God. And
hey, Carl, we're going to have to take a quick break. When we come back, Carl Medaris and I are going to continue this conversation. And one of the questions that I'm going to ask him is, would Jesus bake the cake? So we're going to actually talk about the big news of the day along with our conversation about 42 Seconds, Carl Medaris' latest book. And you can email me at carmen@myfaithradio.com or call us at 877-93-FAITH to get a copy. And in answer to Jessica's question, yes, I am posting my opening commentary from today at reconnectwithcarmen.com. This is Connecting Faith. I'm Carmen LaBurge. We'll be right back. Hey friends, you're listening to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge. Indeed, when we speak, let it be about God's grace and let it be about who God is and how he cares for people and what he's busy doing in the world. Let us be bearing continual witness in our words to the character of God, who's seeking to make himself known, not only in but through us, that indeed the kingdom principles of the King might be made known in the kingdoms of this world. My conversation partner today is Carl Medaris. Among other things, we are talking about his latest book, which is 42 Seconds, which, you know, my shorthand would be, you know, like how Jesus got into conversations with people and shared with them things that changed their lives. And he did so in such a way that wasn't really propositional in terms of the way we think about apologetics. But he sure did bridge the gap between the eternal and the everyday for the people whom he encountered. And that's what we want to do. Right. We want to be Jesus people in the world who are helping people reconnect the eternal with the everyday. We want to do so in ways that honor him. So, Carl Medeiros, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
Thank you. Good to be here again.
So before the break, we were talking about sort of the art of conversation. And it occurred to me that we actually talk. We have a 12-year-old and a 14-year-old. So the art of conversation is important, because sometimes there are conversation subjects or words that they use that they've heard somewhere, and we have to say, not really from, you don't want to say not in my house, but not really a word Christians want to be using. Here's why. Topics of conversation, sort of like, where are you hearing those things? Trying to have open-ended conversations with them. And again, always coming back to, well, here's my view of that, and here's why I think the way I think about that, but what do you think? And I'm wondering what you're thinking or what your friends are thinking about these things. So I like the way that you invite us in 42 seconds to be people who tell more stories, who leave conversations open-ended, who don't, we shouldn't be trying to necessarily seal the deal every time. When we think about conversations, one of the things we say to our kids is, all right, so we want to be the people who are really good at listening to others in order that we can ask a really good question that grows out of something they have said in order to keep them talking. Would you say that is a valid sort of conversational hermeneutic, like a way of thinking about conversation?
I like that phrase, conversational hermeneutic. That's good. I'm gonna totally steal that. I might tweet it.
You can have it. I just made it up, so you can totally have it.
No, it's really good. Yes, absolutely. That's a great conversational hermeneutic. I mean, I think, again, as I was saying before the break, anytime we come to a conversation with all the answers and with our minds made up and we're waiting to talk over the person, this is not healthy conversation. And none of us like that when somebody else does that to us. And so, I don't want somebody to come to me and they've read a bunch of books about why Christianity is stupid and the Bible's been changed, the Bible's wrong, and Noah didn't have an ark and there was no flood, and then it comes and just starts attacking and it doesn't listen to me. I mean, I don't like that. It's just actually not fun. It's not interesting. So I think we have to be just as careful not to do that to the people. Absolutely.
Hmm. So is there something that we tend to do in conversation that leads people away from Jesus instead of toward him? Like, I'm just wondering, is there something that we tend to do that shuts people down and sends them away?
Yeah, I think the big thing is kind of on the same theme, that we tend to talk at people. I won't even say preach, because most of us aren't preachers. We're not preaching at them, really, but we're talking at them rather than actually having a conversation. I mean, the art of a good conversation is give and take. It's two-way. It's curiosity. It's you saying, huh, I had a friend who was Wiccan. Wiccan is, they would call that white witchcraft. So it's not the real scary witches with black hats that, turn you into a frog. It's the nice witches that like the earth and sun and wind. And this guy's name was Chris. And he was telling me one day that he and his Wiccan circle pray around a tree. And he was doing that just to kind of, he knew what I believe. He came to our small group a couple times. He just thought he'd get a reaction like, hey, Carl, we sit around a tree, hold hands and hum around a tree. And it was, you could tell he was saying, so what do you have to say to that? And I said to him, that sounds awesome. I love sitting in circles. Holding hands is always good. And God made trees. I love it. And he was like, what? I mean, he actually got so confused because I didn't engage him at the same plane that he was trying to engage me. We do that with Muslims. Muslims will come to you and say, Jesus is not God. He didn't die on the cross. Muhammad's the final prophet. The Quran's the final book. What do you think? Kind of like, so there, touche. And I would just say, those are really interesting statements. I love that. I'd love to talk about that. And you know what that reminds me of? That reminds me of a time when Jesus was sitting down with some of his disciples, some of his friends, and he started telling this story about a man that had two sons. And then I just tell the parable of the prodigal son, which has absolutely nothing to do with what the guy just said. But who cares what the guy just said? I know something that trumps everything that he just said. It's Jesus. So why wouldn't we talk about Jesus? I mean, that's that's good conversation. That invites them into a new way of thinking. I think that's helpful.
Okay, so I told you before the break I was going to ask you a specific question about a headline of the day, and it's in relationship to the Masterpiece Cake Shop case, which the Supreme Court just issued its ruling on today. And so for those of you who are listening and may have joined us midway through the show, my conversation today is with Carl Medaris. His book is 42 Seconds. You can find more information at carlmedaris.com. But he and I are now going to demonstrate for you what it looks like to actually for two Christians to have a conversation that's unplanned, that takes the headline news of the day, seeks to bring the mind of Christ to bear, and we're just going to see where it goes. So, Carl, would Jesus bake the cake?
I love it. That reminds me of a story. So I was sitting at a table with my wife with about 10 people at Passover. It was a Jewish friend's house, and they were serving the Passover Seder meal. And the couple right across from us was a lesbian couple, two ladies. And she knew, the lady that asked me this question, she knew who I am. She knows what I believe. And right in the middle of matzo ball soup, she looked across the table right at me, and she said, "Carl, what do you think about gay marriage?" I mean, she's sitting next to her, you know, gay partner. And so it was a total setup. And I said, I looked at her right in the eyes. I said, "You know, Tracy, you know what I think? I think Jesus thinks you're awesome." And actually literally took the breath. I mean, you could feel the air suck because everybody was listening to our conversation because they heard her question to me and they're waiting for my answer. Sucked the air out of the room. She started to cry. She started crying so hard, she literally, her face fell down into her matzo ball soup, and she got matzo ball on her nose. And that's the kind of, so who knows? I don't know if Jesus would bake the cake or not. But I think we constantly get asking ourselves the wrong questions, and then we come up with the wrong answers because it's the wrong question. So, you know, is the Supreme Court ruling right or wrong? Was that guy correct? The truth people would say, yes, absolutely. We don't bake cakes for gay weddings. The grace people, we might call them progressive or liberal, the grace people might say, well, of course he would. He loves everybody. He'd bake a cake and he'd hug them and then he'd invite them to follow him. And by the way, my opinion is not about what Jesus would do, but what I would do. I personally would absolutely bake the cake and I would do that. As I'm baking the cake and taking it to the wedding and attending the wedding, by the way, I would invite them to follow Jesus. It's hard to invite somebody to follow Jesus if you're not talking to them. That's what I would do.
And so I would not bake the cake, but I would have the conversation about Jesus. And absolutely, as you have so eloquently laid out, I would have the conversation with the person. I would probably be in a significant enough relationship with the person that we would be able to talk together about why I could not bake the cake. And I could not attend the wedding. But I could, and that for me, Carl, goes back to, not really feeling like I can, participate in something where I would be perceived as extending a blessing that I don't believe God is giving to a particular act, in a particular religious act. And so in much the same way, I wouldn't attend the Wiccan service around the tree, even though in the conversation with the Wiccan, I'd be very quick to say, you know what, Christians gather around a tree as well. It happens to be the cross, and something we believe something really significant happened on that cross. What do you think happened on that tree? You know, so I do think that there are all these opportunities. I want to help people taste and see that the Lord is good. And so the cake conversation that I want to have, right, is about how do we savor the Savior? Like, what is the savor of the Savior? What does it look like for me to be the kind of person who would have table fellowship with people who are, first of all, who would have table fellowship on Passover at a Jewish friend's house, and we would be sharing that Passover meal with people who obviously are living in ways that are very different than the way I would understand to be aligned with a biblical sexual ethic. And yet we can all sit down at table fellowship together and we can be, eating matzo ball soup. So I think that there are lots of grace-filled opportunities for the kind of table fellowship you're talking about. And I actually think that is a barrier breaker.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think some of it too, Carmen, has to do with your own, you know, your own line. We have to honor, you know, this internal line of conscience in our heart that we have to, I hopefully would assume, comes from the Holy Spirit and our knowledge of God and His Word. And for some, I think we err when we think all of us have to toe the same line. Like there would be no way I'd come back to you and say, Carmen, come on. I mean, I can't believe you wouldn't go to the wedding. That's horrible. I mean, I would never think of that response, and you didn't say that to me. But I think it could be that I could go to the wedding in good conscience and be okay with that and actually lift up Jesus, and you couldn't go, and both would be okay. Do you agree? Do you think that's possible?
Yeah, I absolutely think that's possible.
Yeah.
I think that's a big thing. Yeah, I think there's a lot of room in this conversation, and so much of it is relational, and so much of it is who's going to make what of who went. Like, that's part of the challenge that we're in. People are may or may not make a big deal of you going, but what they would make of my going would not be worth the hassle to my gay friends.
Right. Exactly.
like this is part of the challenge of the world that we live in. Friends.
It could actually hurt your gay friend. It could actually hurt them.
Yeah.
You have to stop picketing you being there, and it could actually ruin their wedding if you went. So, I get that.
Yeah, exactly. So, friends, my conversation is with Carl Medeiros. You can check out what he's working on at carlmedeiros.com. The book we're talking about today is 42 Seconds. So let's circle back around to the book so that we can be sure that folks who might have missed the beginning of the conversation know what we're talking about. And let me remind folks, you can get a copy by calling me at 877-93-FAITH or emailing me at carmen@myfaithradio.com. So, Carl, in a nutshell, what is 42 Seconds as a book, and what do you hope it accomplishes?
It's about short conversations, short, effective conversations like Jesus had. And it's teaching us really a new way of thinking. It's a new paradigm of having conversation that is open-ended. It's asking lots of questions. It's broken up into four sections: be kind, be present, be brave, be Jesus. And each section has five chapters, so it's actually a real easy read. It's very practical. And I want people to walk away after reading that book and think, I can't wait to walk back outside to my mailbox and strike up a new conversation with my neighbor who I've talked to 1,000 times with these new tools that I've just gained from reading this book.
So, okay, now let me ask you this question. When you're in Dubai, is there a mailbox?
There's not. It's all FedEx. It just gets delivered to your door. So there's no mailbox. Actually, Dubai is a big city that's very multinational, but in some ways very lonely because people live in high rises. They tend to go up the elevator, walk out of the elevator, walk into their apartment and stay there and order food in. Uber Eats, Uber delivers food everywhere, and everybody else delivers. And so it's actually a very isolated society, unfortunately.
Hmm. Okay. Now, how does that differ from where you're at in Colorado?
Well, I mean, in small town Colorado, probably like in small town Midwest and small town America, across America, it's very friendly. Everybody talks to everybody. Everybody knows everybody, which, you know, has its upsides and downsides, but it's a friendly, you know, but compared to New York City or a big city, it's probably pretty similar. I think big cities tend to do that, you know, anywhere in the world. So, yeah, that's a good point. And small towns in the United Arab Emirates or small towns in the Middle East are incredibly hospitable and friendly. And the big cities, you know, Beirut, Cairo, Jerusalem and Israel, Tel Aviv, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, places like that tend to be a bit more isolated. When you get more people together that don't know each other, they tend to not talk. And that I talk about that exact point in this book about how we can break down barriers even in a big, sterile, individualistic city.
Okay, I love that. Carl, you're going to have to come back and we're going to have to talk again because this has been fun.
Thanks.
And we want to be demonstrating, like, what does it look like for Christians just to get together and talk about stuff and then continue the conversation, you know, off air in our real lives. So, Carl Medeiros, thank you for joining us today on Connecting Faith. Friends, when we come back, I'll be making the connecting point. I'm Carmen LeBird. You're listening to Connecting Faith.
I have this all in the depth of my soul. In the flood or the fire, you with me and you won't let go.
Hey friends, you are listening to Connecting Faith. I'm Carmen LaBurge, and we're going to make the connecting point. So I had a graduate school professor who was supposed to be teaching a class about one thing, but often the class was about totally other things. And I remember that there was a classmate who needed to be away for a number of days related to someone in her family who had died. And our professor took the opportunity not only to, you know, speak to the concern, personal concern of this individual, which was so dear and such a public demonstration of really understanding what grief feels like and how complicated that can be, and how desperate we are to get back to the people we love when bad things have happened. And then he said this. It was one of those offhand things that ends up being sort of the one thing you remember from the entire time you sat under someone's teaching. And he said, you know, I think that as Christians, I hope that every single one of you recognizes that when you show up at that house, God walks in. And for a lot of people, God's not there until the Christian shows up. For a lot of people, they do not feel the presence of God. They don't live with a moment-by-moment awareness of God's of love and concern, and that literally, when you show up, when you walk into a house of grief, when you walk into a disaster, when you walk in and people know who you are and whose you are, when people know that you're a Christian and you show up, God literally walks in. And so I want us to be mindful of that in this sort of larger conversation that we're having about how long does it take to change a life? How long does it take to change a conversation? And so when you walk in, when you show up, I don't care where you're going today, people are in crisis. People are desperate. Death is real. And the enemy is stomping around, their lives in ways that are destructive and mean and painful. And when you show up, wherever it is, God walks in. If you are a person possessed of the Holy Spirit, then when you show up, God walks in. And so, I think that as we walk our faith out there into the world that God so loves, as God uses us as the vessels of His presence in the world today, as God sends us as the Jesus people to be Jesus, full of grace and full of truth into the world, you know, we have to ask ourselves, you know, how does God see the people who I'm looking at right now? How does He see these people? How does He see the circumstances these people are in? What's God's gut reaction? Like, you and I can have any number of sort of snap reactions to things. But, you know, when the Bible talks about Jesus's gut reaction, it uses a particular Greek word that I will not attempt to say here because my husband's probably listening and I will be corrected. But it's a gut reaction in that Jesus is feeling the compassion down in His bowels, right? That is a gut reaction, right? If you're feeling it down there in your bowels, that's a gut reaction. And the places in Scripture where it talks about that is, you know, when Jesus has compassion on the people, when He's moved with compassion, the language there is that it's this gut reaction. And so if God's gut reaction is compassion, to be moved with compassion, what would that then say, you know, God would do in that circumstance in relationship to those people? How would God respond? And then if you and I are God walking into that situation, are we doing what He would do? Are we saying what He would say? Are we treating people with the kind of precious concern that He genuinely has for them? Friends, you and I are the ambassadors of the King. We represent God in the conversations and the controversies of our day. And so, you know, if you're looking at wow, your Twitter feed or your Facebook feed today or whatever other social media, or maybe it's your text messages or your Instagram or whatever. And by the way, Pew has some new research out, the 2018 research based on teens and technology, which if you are a parent or a grandparent, you actually have to go read. So I've got that posted today on my Must Read Monday at reconnectwithcarmen.com. You have to go read it, because if you're saying to yourself, I'm not on any of those platforms you just talked about, well, YouTube is actually tops the list of what young people are using today. And so by virtue of the fact that, you know, I'm on radio or you're listening to me on podcast, you know, I'm already not on the platform that they are paying attention to. You know, you and I have to figure out, I guess, how to get on YouTube in a much more ubiquitous way. So I don't know. That's a conversation for another day. But how are we going to engage in the world that God so loves in ways that are actually going to communicate who God is? I mean, we're going to have to be the people who are literally out there in the world, in the conversations. And if it only takes 42 seconds to change a conversation, then you and I better be prepared to speak truth with grace in 42 seconds. So how much can you say in 42 seconds? Well, you can communicate a lot. Now, my mom reminds me all the time that you're actually constantly communicating a wide number of things in a second. There's like apparently in every 7 seconds, we're making 7 judgments. And some of those judgments are about actually the content of what someone is saying. But most of it is not the content of what they're saying. It's how they're saying it. And it's the way that they're saying it. So, you know, it's about your tone of voice, not just the content of your speech. It's the content of your character, not just your words. It's who they know you are, not just what you're saying. And so all of these things are important, and eye contact is important, and body language, and the emotion with which you're speaking. So did you know that your emotions are contagious? That's another part of this as well. Okay, so we want to be feeling, we want to have the feelings of God toward things. We want to have, obviously, the mind of Christ on the matters of the day. We want to not only speak the truth, we want to do so in love and in ways that honor Jesus. We cannot be gospel-presenting people if we're not doing so in gospel ways. And so that's my encouragement to you today. In this conversation about, you know, in 42 seconds, literally Jesus turned people's lives upside down and inside out and right side forward. I don't even know if that's a phrase, but you get my point. Okay, so in 42 seconds today, what are you going to get done in a conversation with another person? Maybe you're just going to listen or ask better questions or tell better stories instead of always answering with a propositional truth that shuts down or ends the conversation right there. So we're going to have all kinds of conversations this week on Connecting Faith. I encourage you to check out what we're doing at the Connecting Faith page at myfaithradio.com. You can communicate with me via email, carmen@myfaithradio.com. Today, I actually have a ministry website called reconnectwithcarmen.com. And today at reconnectwithcarmen.com, I've got my opening commentary from today's program about the action of the Supreme Court related to the Masterpiece Cake Shop case. And I also have my Must Read Monday, which is all the stuff that I would love to be talking about but don't have time, helping you bring the Christian worldview to bear on the issues of our day. Hey, as we look forward to this week, we've got lots of great conversations planned. And so you can check out the schedule for the week on the Connecting Faith page at myfaithradio.com. But just to give you a little tease, I know that on Friday, we're going to be talking with Johnny Erickson Tata about when is it right to die. So that's definitely a conversation that you're not going to want to miss. Hey, and that Pew research related to those latest findings, that article is actually called Teens, Social Media, and Technology. Really encourage you to check that out. All right, friends, that's all the time we've got here today on Connecting Faith. Let me know what you're thinking about. Send me an email, carmen@myfaithradio.com, and join the conversation. You can also join me on Twitter. I'm @CarmenLaBurge. All right, friends, have a great day, and God bless. We'll see you right back here tomorrow on Connecting Faith.
Thanks for listening to this conversation from Connecting Faith. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend to grow the impact of Connecting Faith. Also, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player and never miss a conversation.